Millions of Americans are arrested every year, and for many of them, it's one of the worst moments of their lives, something they want to forget. But it turns out that's easier said than done. Their mugshot, the photo capturing that arrest, is on full public display across the internet, just a few clicks away from potential employers or landlords. Those mugshots often end up in online galleries published by local newspapers, too. For the last decade, online mugshot galleries have become a pretty easy source of revenue for struggling newsrooms. When readers click through the gallery, each of those clicks means more page views, and more page views equals more advertising dollars.
One of the problems with mugshots are they are the worst photo anybody ever gets. It's worse than a driver's license photo. It's just bad. It's usually people in their most anxious moments. They're strung out. They're nervous. It's just a bad photo, and that is what ends up being on the website.
That's Chris Quinn, the editor of Cleveland.com. About a year ago, his newsroom started rethinking how they used mugshots after conversations with various leaders in the community.
And one raised her hand and asked me if I'd ever considered that the lineup of mugshots that we've been running all these years propagates racial stereotypes. And I have to admit, I had never considered that, but as soon as she asked the question, it resonated. And because we get those mugshots from police departments, we're kind of at their mercy. If they have a bias in releasing mugshots specifically of African Americans, that's what we get. If you went back over the years and looked at all the mugshots, you would see that they skew heavily African American, where the percentage of arrested people does not skew anywhere near that way.
Since then, Chris says they've significantly reduced the usage of mugshots in their news coverage. They still sometimes run them in stories about heinous crimes like murder or corruption, but they avoid mugshot galleries altogether. And Cleveland.com is far from the only news organization reflecting on what publishing mugshots means for the people who are in them. Just last month, the Houston Chronicle announced it would stop publishing photos of people who have been arrested but not convicted in its online mugshot gallery. For more on this, we spoke to Carrie Blakinger, staff writer at the Marshall Project and a former criminal justice reporter for the Houston Chronicle, and Sarah Logeson, an assistant professor at the School of Criminal Justice at Rutgers University, Newark. And I started by asking Sarah who these mugshot galleries disproportionately affect.
I think there's sort of two layers of consequences or inequalities that are part of the mugshot issue. The first is just mass arrests in the criminal justice system. So who are the police more likely to arrest, especially based on somebody's age or race or gender, or if they live in a poor neighborhood or a wealthy neighborhood? But then the second layer of it that's been, I think, less discussed is if you are arrested, you know, who's more likely to be able to manage their online reputation? So this has to do with people's access to technology and resources. So not only are people disproportionately likely to be arrested, but once arrested, it can be very difficult to actually manage the digital reputational consequences.
Sarah, why are news organizations starting to have these kinds of conversations now?
I think that news organizations are starting to hear from lots of people who are taking issue with this. There's, you know, 11 to 13 million arrests made per year. And a mugshot, you know, when it goes online, it stays online. So we're talking about a cumulative effect of millions and millions and millions of photos. And at first, I think people were really afraid and scared when they found their mugshot online and did everything possible to avoid it. But increasingly, now that it's just become so widespread, I think people are asserting their internet privacy rights, and they're going after newsrooms, and they're making the staff have conversations about this. And I think newsrooms, like any other institution, looks to see what their peers are doing. And of course, the backdrop of this is criminal justice reform. America thinks really differently about the criminal justice system and the way that it punishes. So I think that the mugshot issue is part of this broader change that we see.
Is this a uniquely American practice?
It absolutely is. This is something that in America we have different sets of public policies that guide the release of criminal justice data. So court records and police records are sort of managed through public records requests, while a person's rap sheet is actually managed through the state police typically and is a lot harder to get access to. In Europe, for instance, they would take all of these different types of criminal justice data and consider it all private. There's a more articulated right to privacy in Europe. There's a serious concentration on rehabilitation and the ability for people to move on from having contact with the criminal justice system. And then there's just different internet privacy rights in Europe. So you have the right to be forgotten, where you could petition to have your Google search results changed in Europe the way that you can't do in the United States.
Carrie, You've had firsthand experience with this, right? This is something you wrote about in the Marshall Project. What did it mean for you to have your mugshot posted online for anyone to see or access?
Well, my mugshot was also I think particularly stigmatizing mugshot. It looks like one of those sort of faces of meth pictures. I was, you know, arrested for heroin, and I had sort of scabs all over my face, and, like, you know, my hair is all messed up. So it's a very specific type of mugshot that people like to gawk at. Mm-hmm. And after I got out, because, I mean, obviously when I was in jail, I wasn't reading the comments, I wasn't checking my email. But after I got out, there was a whole slew of, you know, some pretty nasty messages, from things like just telling me they hope I rotted in prison, to calling me names I can't repeat on the radio, to just saying that, you know, I deserved to die, or describing how police should have killed me. And obviously those are strangers on the internet. Like, it's not great to read them, but, you know, I'm not going to sit there and, like, obsess over it now. But it did make me wonder, like, if this is what a stranger who thinks no one knows their name and it's anonymous, like, if this is what their thoughts are and this is what their first impressions are, I would imagine this is what, you know, employers and potential landlords, like maybe potential friends, I mean, this is what other strangers might be thinking as well and just not saying it. So it really made me think about how stigmatizing those images are and how problematic they can be in terms of restarting your life.
Sarah, if someone does want to get their mugshot offline, if they want it scrubbed, is there any sort of path that they can take?
Well, right now, if a police department makes a mugshot publicly available, it is totally legal for any other website, including a news website, to republish it. So, you know, my research has shown that people kind of have three different options. The first is that they could just ask for mercy, essentially. They could reach out to their local news. They could petition to have their photo removed, especially if their record was later expunged or they were found not to be guilty. So that's one option, but, you know, there's not a lot of certainty about what would happen. The second thing they can do is sort of make it part of their narrative and accept that this is widely publicly available through a Google search for somebody's name, and just sort of manage that new stigmatization. The third thing that people do, though, and I think this is actually the most common, is to just start avoiding situations that might trigger a Google search. And this becomes actually a public safety problem, because all the research we have about recidivism and preventing crime shows that people who have stable employment, strong social bonds, are involved in schools or their churches, are much less likely to commit a crime. So if you're avoiding situations, social situations where someone might Google you, there could be consequences down the road.
Carrie, do you think that some of the pressure that's being brought to bear on news organizations has to do with the changing demographics of who works in the industry? Are there more people of color who are sort of pressuring editors to change their practices?
I think that journalism still has a huge diversity problem. I think it's hard to say if there's still enough of that impact for that to be driving the change. But, you know, I will say that I think if newsrooms had traditionally been more diverse, if we'd already had more people of color working in newsrooms, you know, maybe this is something we would have grappled with sooner.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah, this is, I guess, just one way newsrooms are rethinking their coverage when it comes to criminal justice. Any other things that you think we should know about?
A big part of this is to think critically about the role of the media in criminal justice, watchdogging and criminal justice reform. Just the bulk release of mugshots is just posting police activity on a news website at the expense of the people who are arrested, without doing any critical analysis about who the police are arresting or what patterns are emerging from that. So I think newsrooms have to think about that carefully, because in some ways, these mugshot galleries are just legitimizing the criminal justice system rather than keeping an eye on it for their readers.
Sarah Logeson is an assistant professor at Rutgers University Newark School of Criminal Justice, and Carrie Blakinger is a staff writer at the Marshall Project. Thanks to both of you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.